Well, it's time for another contemporary edition of Bathrop Spears Broadsides, plus a flashback pasted on. And as is sometimes the case, the flashback is going to be longer than the show. The show itself contains a couple of interviews with Keith McHenry and some commentary by me and some music. And then we zip immediately into a flashback that I thought I normally do flashbacks that I've never done before, that the show was done once and hasn't been done since. And I kind of like to do it so I can actually get myself to annotate what the show contains. And if somebody really wants to go back to a particular show, they have an index, which you can find on the Huff website under huffsantacruz.org. And then the name of the show, Bathrop Spears Broadsides. We're still struggling with the website, or I am, but gradually all this information is going up there. So those who have a passionate interest in history or herstory or what happened before, according to me and those I interviewed, get a chance to hear it. And don't even have to hear it. They can see it because they can see a summary of it, which is much more, I don't know, it's saves time anyway, if you can do it that way. And that's the theory. That's the reason why I do it. So let's jump into this and hope that it's worth getting our feet wet because, well, that's where we are and that's where we're going.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you. Sing me of wars and sing me of breadlines. Tell me of front page news. Sing me of strikes and last minute headlines. Dress your observation in syncopation. Sing me a song with social significance. There's nothing else that will do. It must get hot with what is what, or I won't love you. I want a song that's satirical, putting the mirror into miracle. It must be packed with social fact, or I won't love you. Sing me of kings and conferences martial. Tell me of mills and mines. Sing me of courts that aren't impartial. What's to be done with them? Tell me in rhythm. Sing me a song with social significance. There's nothing else that will do. It must be tense with common sense, or I won't love you.
So let's begin with some actually really contemporary stuff, though not exactly local. We're going to go over to Minneapolis, Minnesota. Freezing weather, where on Friday massive crowds marched, tens of thousands of people, some say hundreds of thousands, demanding that ICE leave the city. And in response, they, the next day, that was yesterday, if you're listening to this on Sunday when it's first being netcast, they killed Alex Petit. I don't know if that's how to pronounce his name. That's what it looked like on the screen. And even as I sort of tuned in on YouTube to catch what, well, Status Quo, one of the news services, was putting out as the most recent, I got this.
See the agents there tackling somebody in the street? Piling on him and arresting him. Agents telling press to back up. The man is trying to scream out his name.
No! You're gonna have to kill me! You're gonna have to kill me!
JT, put the microphone, direct the
microphone. You're gonna have to kill me! I have done nothing at all! I have done nothing at all! My name is Matthew James Obadiah Allen. I'm a United States citizen. If you kill me on the street,
they just sprayed pepper spray directly into the man's face.
You're gonna kill me. That's what you want? You want to kill me? You want to kill me on the street? You're gonna have to fucking kill me! Ah! I have done nothing! Matthew James Obadiah Allen! I'm a United States citizen! I have done nothing wrong! They're chaining me, spraying me, and beating me! I have done nothing! No! I'm not gonna let you slay!
There are dozens of ICE agents around.
I've done nothing wrong! You shot me walking away with my back to you! I have done nothing! I have done nothing! Get my jacket! Get my passport out of my front pocket! Unzip my jacket! Get my passport out of my front pocket!
Yeah, in case you can't hear what he's saying, he was shouting out his name. And now he's saying, unzip my jacket, get my passport out of my front pocket.
No, I did not! I was walking away with my back to you! Open my passport! I have not assaulted anyone! Stop taking pictures and save my life! Now!
He's asking for an ambulance as he's laying on the ground.
I need an ambulance. I need an ambulance, please. Matthew James Obadiah Allen.
Please, go.
Authorities are moving us back.
Help me! I need an ambulance!
We're now moving backwards.
Help me!
Hey, JT.
Agents are moving backward. They put the man on the truck. They're firing some kinds of munitions there into the crowd.
They are firing tear gas.
Yep. Now they're firing tear gas canisters into the crowd. The agents are rushing forward. Oh. They rush into a side parking lot, seemingly after some of the demonstrators. They've tackled another one. Another two on the ground. One of those protesters has been, at least one has been pepper sprayed directly in the face.
And what does this have to do with Santa Cruz? Well, there have been some recent police killings in adjoining neighborhoods. I think Seaside, Monterey, San Jose. I haven't got the details on those, just saw the headlines. But I did watch this. I was glued to the screen watching these masked thugs go after angry, shouting protesters. But nobody was engaging in any violent behavior as far as threatening any of the ICE people. They were just demanding the ICE people leave. And they didn't, of course. They simply have reinforced and come in more force. I'm going to read now an article from the Counterpunch website, probably written a few days before this Saturday incident that was happening as I made this show. It's an article by a regular columnist, Jeffrey St. Clair, called Roaming Charges. And it's all about the kind of various things that have happened in the last week. He usually does it on a weekly basis. And it begins talking about Davos and the conference that happened over in Switzerland that Trump visited and made his latest proclamations at. But I'm going to begin where he starts talking about the ICE activities here in the U.S. St. Clair begins with a quote from Katie Rogers. Trump said he felt badly about the ICE shooting of Renee Good, woman who was killed as she attempted to leave an ICE event, shot three times in her car by an ICE agent, which Trump later claimed was because she was trying to run him over. But that is not in any way what it looked like when I was watching the various videos. Anyway, this quote continues, and that is partly because Trump felt badly because her parents, Renee Good's parents, particularly her father, he said, are Trump supporters. I hope he still is, but I don't know, Trump said about Good's father. A lot of people, they say, oh, he loves you, the president said, before adding, I hope he still feels that way. Jeffrey St. Clair continues, Renee Good still had a pulse when paramedics who had to trek across the snow several blocks on foot because ICE blocked the ambulance from entering Portland Avenue reached her. More than 15 minutes after she was shot, and ICE refused to allow a physician who was on the scene to treat her wound. They wanted the fucking bitch dead. That was the last thing you hear from the guy who shot her as she was driving away. Fucking bitch. The independent autopsy of Renee Good showed that she had three bullet wounds, one to the left arm, one in the right lung, and a fatal wound to the left temple that exited the right side of her head, meaning that the fatal shot was fired through the side window when there was no threat to the officer who killed her. The MAGA argument that Good could have been turning her head when she was shot is undermined by the fact that the bullet hole in the windshield was on the lower left, well below Good's head, even if it was turned to the right, but directly at the level of her chest. I'm not sure I follow all these directions, but perhaps a listener does. Trump's threat to send federal troops into Minnesota without a single serious injury to an ICE agent makes whatever happened in the Gulf of Tonkin, which was where LBJ used a phony report about North Vietnamese attacking U.S. ships to massively upsurge the Vietnam War and essentially kill millions of Vietnamese in the years that followed, and tens of thousands of Americans as well, and making them murderers as well, of course. Interesting footnote, according to, again, the writer Jeffrey St. Clair, The Doors' Jim Morrison's father was in command of the U.S. Navy fleet in the Gulf of Tonkin. But it was also revealed much later that Rear Admiral Morrison told the Navy HQ that he thought the second so-called incident that led to an escalation of the troops was false, and the Navy brass never relayed this to LBJ, who used it as the pretext for war. ICE is shredding the Bill of Rights one amendment after another. Its agents now claim it would cause chaos to let people it arrested and detained see their lawyers. The Wall Street Journal reports that ICE agents get bonuses based on their arrests, which they get to keep even if the person is released without charges. With the support of many Democrats, the budget for ICE was tripled. Starting this year, it will be a larger budget than the FBI, the DEA, the ATF, and the U.S. Marshals Service combined. That's Federal Bureau of Investigation, Alcohol and Tobacco and Firearms Bureau, U.S. Marshals Service, not quite sure, DEA's Drug Enforcement Administration, I think it is. Some, like Cory Booker, want to give ICE even more money in the name of, quote, training. It's been one of the sad consequences of the falling off after the murder of many black folks on the street and the countrywide protests that followed in 2014 and 2020. The idea that if you could train police departments rather than shift the funding from police departments to people who could actually help in these situations rather than escalate them. In other words, training is a dead end, as at least I've always thought that. It sounds good, but it has little to do with reality and what's actually going to happen on the ground. Police departments are entrenched and inveterate. They have to be completely reorganized or essentially disenfranchised, and a different kind of institution has to take their place. And the story continues. The guy who killed Rene Good was a 10-year ICE veteran who had been thoroughly trained by the U.S. military, Border Patrol, and ICE, and Good's murder was captured on three different cameras. So what does any of this have to do with anything? Trump has sent 13% of his immigration forces to Minnesota and is considering sending in the military. Yet Minnesota's immigrant population ranks 23rd in the U.S., far behind red states, that is, pro-Trump states, like Texas, Florida, Arizona, Georgia, North Carolina, and Utah. But most of Minnesota's immigrant population is documented. For example, Minnesota has an estimated total immigrant population of 495,352, but only 77,000 plus are undocumented. That's 16%. Compare that to the undocumented populations of Florida, 1 million, 20%, Texas, 1.8 million, 32%, Arizona, 250,000, 25%, Georgia, 374,000, 32%, North Carolina, 325,000, 34%, and Utah, 100,000, 33%. Point being, there's a far larger undocumented population in the pro-Trump states, but he's sending these in as a sort of it appears to be a partisan attack on Democratic states. And of course, one has to also add, though, that the Democratic governor and the Democratic mayor of Minneapolis, and perhaps St. Paul. I'm not quite sure who's what in those two cities, but they aren't doing anything. They aren't coming out to stand with the crowds and be with the people there, instead saying, "Oh, we'll write a nasty note to the to Trump. We'll insist that the ICE leave. We'll just insist it, but we won't show up and put our bodies on the lines like the population is forced to do every day and every night, at least most recently in those, I guess it's St. Paul, Minnesota. I don't know whether it's St. Paul or Minneapolis, but it's thereabouts. What part of the Constitution, the story continues, allows an ICE agent to bust into a Thai restaurant with his gun drawn in St. Paul, Minnesota, shouting at the terrified owners that he was looking for a kid he accused them without evidence of hiding? ICE conducted a warrantless raid on the home of an elderly U.S. citizen named Chongli Scott Thau, dragged him out of the house into freezing temperatures in his underwear, perp-walked him in front of the press, and then accused him of first being a child molester, then, after that libel fell apart, of housing two sex offenders, allegations which seem to have been completely invented to justify this abusive and unconstitutional home invasion and arrest and detention. And then St. Clair quotes this story. ICE offers reason for the raid, which is then challenged. And it reads as follows. The U.S. citizen lives with these two convicted sex offenders at the site of the operation, DHS, Department of Homeland Security, said. The individual refused to be fingerprinted or facially ID'd. He matched the description of the targets. Theo's family said in a statement that it categorically disputes the DHS account and strongly objects to DHS's attempt to publicly justify this conduct with false and misleading claims. Thau told the AP that only he, his son and daughter-in-law, and his grandson live at the rental home. Neither they nor the property's owner are listed in the Minnesota Sex Offender Registry. The nearest sex offender listed as living in the zip code is more than two blocks away. A GoFundMe page for the St. Paul snowplow driver who was racially profiled, arrested by ICE, and transferred more than 1,100 miles away to a detention prison in Texas, despite being a legal resident with no criminal record and an employee of the city of St. Paul. His wife is now afraid to leave her house, and the family has no income. The detained man has a serious medical condition, and ICE stopped paying its third-party medical providers in October, so many detainees with serious and even critical medical conditions aren't receiving any treatment. First they came for the Oglala, now the Navajo. There was a very good reason Christy Noem was banned from setting foot on any Lakota reservation in South Dakota when she was governor. And then there's a little sub-story by Representative Teresa Leger Fernandez. ICE detained a Navajo man for 4 hours after he identified himself, offered his tribal ID, certificate of Indian blood, and birth certificate. They told him he must be stealing someone's identity and that they would get his family next. As he described it, "I was treated as if we hadn't earned our place here. This is our place. This is beyond racism. They hate us like we were pests and rodents in their home. But this is our home and always has been. It is against the Constitution and against basic human dignity to detain and arrest someone for the color of their skin. ICE must be stopped and Secretary Noem removed from office." And I think now it's time for a musical break.
Comrades, critics, bots, trolls, and everybody else, David Rovitz and Itsuno have gone and made another album. The Red and the Blue just dropped on music streaming platforms on January 9th. And Save the Humans drops on January 15th, MLK's birthday. Whether or not it's a good idea from a marketing angle to release another album a week after the last one, who knows? But we only put out albums when the songs are all good ones, and David and I wrote 10 new songs during the last week of December. With this 10th album we've done together, the process has become fairly systematized. There is still always the most elusive part of the process, as David sees it, which is first the kernel of an idea, and then some kind of phrase or a couple of lines that crystallizes the idea. After that, writing and refining the story contained in the verses, which tends to follow easily enough over the course of a couple hours, give or take a couple hours after the refrain has materialized. Working with the AI band, lyrics are refined further, along with prompts, until eventually we have arrived at something really good, often after scores of efforts that miss the mark by anywhere from a little to a lot. David spent the last week of December largely at home with his family. When he listened to the news on occasion, it generally led him to turn it off again, experience strong emotions, and write another song. After writing each song and arriving at a recording of it, within the space of a few hours each time, the next thing is spending a few minutes with the AI video generator to make some kind of a video to go along with the song in order to have something worth sharing as what they often these days call a reel on Instagram, YouTube, and TikTok. We always get people complaining about these reels. Unlike with the music, the videos are obviously AI generated. There are reasons for that. In any case, some people don't like that, and they seem to assume that the only reason we'd be using an AI video generation platform like this is because we love these AI-generated videos so much. But that's not the case. The reality for us and so many other people out there that we might call musicians, if we didn't have the option of spending 5 minutes creating an AI-generated video to go along with the song, we wouldn't be putting up videos to go along with the vast majority of these songs in the first place. Without a video of some kind, as people involved with content creation know well, far fewer people are likely to hear the song. Because of spending a few minutes generating a video for each song gets thousands more people hearing it. It's the same reason we post selfies from the airport when we're leaving for a tour, just trying to get the music out there in ways that are affordable. A lot of people have serious questions and issues with this new AI superhighway we're all suddenly driving on. Like it or not, know it or not. A lot of us would love to direct our concerns at the decision makers, the people who run the companies that designed and laid down this highway and build these cars we're driving. But the best we all seem to be able to do is beep at each other a lot. And some of us call it activism. Preamble over, now on to this batch of 10 songs, which we think are some of our best yet. January 2025 came with tour plans. The first weekend of the month was in Bisbee, Arizona, and the last half of the month will be in California. With the trip to Bisbee coming up, David read up on the history of the labor movement there. In particular, the story around what became known as the Bisbee deportations, when 1,200 striking copper miners and members of the industrial workers of the world were forced at gunpoint to board cattle cars, in which they were shipped in the middle of July, hundreds of miles away from Bisbee, to the New Mexico desert, and left there. That was, unsurprisingly, the last time the IWW tried to organize miners in Bisbee. Here's the first track of Save the Humans, Bisbee, Arizona, 1917. If we've written the kind of song we were trying to write, and the folk process still works like it always has, then someday no one will remember where the song came from, and more people will imagine it was written back in the 1930s and found on a scrap of paper in some elderly copper miner's attic.
Arizona, 1917, the worst kind of company town anybody's ever seen. Phelps Dodge controlled everything there. They owned everything in Bisbee everywhere. It was a town of copper miners, that's what people did. Worked beneath the ground, lived in the skids, risking their lives for just enough to survive. Strike all the miners down below, and they were shipped away to New Mexico. Percent of the miners had joined in, Mexicans and Anglos, the Croatians and the Finns. Then the dirty sheriff working with the company put them in cattle cars that went 500 miles from Bisbee. They went on strike, all the miners down below, and they were shipped away to New Mexico. Mm-hmm. Phelps Dodge never faced any consequences for this obvious disgrace. To deport 1,000 people beneath the summer heat, they broke the union in Bisbee, it just couldn't compete. They went on strike, all the miners down below, and they were shipped away to New Mexico. They went on strike, all the miners down below, and they were shipped away.
So next we're going to hear an account from Troy. I call him Tough Times Troy, just at least that's what occurs to me at the moment. He's an activist who lives outside and who happened by the Coral Street Poverty Industrial Complex, the street that is adjacent to the Poverty Industrial Complex, I should say, at 115 Coral Street, which is the Funding Matters Complex. They call themselves Housing Matters. Not that much housing, but lots of funding. But not enough funding, apparently, to stop them from cutting off services in March to the vast majority of the homeless community and provided only for a creamed few. So, here's Troy's account, which woke me up on the 21st. About an unusual sweep that was happening early and sort of out of sequence and without warning, or at least not the warning that people living there had been given to believe they'd have time to move their stuff in.
You just hear about it secondhand.
I was there. I just saw it.
What happened? Give me the time. When did it happen?
How about 7:30, they just pulled in with the city workers in their trucks. Mm-hmm. And said, started kicking people out. I wasn't there at that time. I just came after they had done, started kicking people out.
Uh-huh. By the time you got there, did you talk to any of the people there about how it was done, or did you notice any, you have any comments about what you did see?
Well, they were pretty mean about it. They said, yeah, get the heck out of here, and some people just scattered like sheep. Mm-hmm. And they said, I'll take off, and now they're, there was about, I'd say about between 30 and 60 of them. 30 and 60?
30 and 60 people affected or cops?
Yes, affected.
Uh-huh.
There was like 12 police and three squads, and then there's like four city trucks.
Any either appearance by the deputies or by other security agencies or by
sheriff?
Yeah, sheriff. You're saying there weren't any sheriffs, but I'm thinking the Coral Street people. Did they come out and did they do anything?
No,
nothing.
They didn't do nothing.
I know. A year ago they used to provide coffee and shit like that. They weren't doing that now, I take it.
No.
Yeah. what about property? Did you notice any property being taken when you saw? Did you saw them putting anything into either garbage disposal trucks or?
Yes, I saw them taking a lot of people's stuff. But the people just left it, abandoned it. They took what they could carry and left the rest. Otherwise, they were going to get cited. But. They were going to get ticketed or taken to jail or something.
Did you see any interactions between the people and the cops? For example, did anybody say, I got to take care of my stuff, I'll be coming right back, can you not take my stuff? Or did anybody leave any notes that you noticed on their property? This is valuable, do not throw it away.
No.
Okay.
No, they just pretty much abandoned what they couldn't carry. They knew it was going to get tossed. They've been through this before.
Yeah. Any notices given that you heard about or saw about or were told about that this was happening on this particular day at this particular time?
No. Okay. Surprise attack.
Yeah, right. And is this a surprise? I guess they've done this before on Wednesday, but they, Do you know if they did this last Wednesday?
And that apparently is where we lost the connection with Troy, which often happens because usually those phones are pretty crappy. That they call them Obama phones sometimes. I'm not sure. They may have some new ones now. Not sure. We have put out a number, and I've mentioned it on the air, and apparently it's getting spruced up, and hopefully will now be monitored more closely, but we're still working with it. The number to call if you see something that is abusive or have experienced it outside having to do with police or service agencies that are treating homeless people like shit or treating them poorly in some way, or, you know, you might even put in an occasional good report if you see something unusually positive happening vis-a-vis the police department or any of these shelter services that get a lot of money for often providing not so much direct services to homeless people, except a very relatively few number. The number to call is 216-8239. Again, 216-8239, and then leave your information, and if you can, how you can be contacted. This will be kept in confidence. It's not for a radio broadcast or anything, or I should say net broadcast. 216-8239. And of course, if you have any comments about this show, you can call me on the Huff line at 423-HUFF or 423-4833. And I will make efforts to get back to you really, truly.
All right, well, today's the 21st of January. I'm on the line with activist Keith McHenry, who's en route somewhere. But Keith, you've been around for the weekend. It's been tumultuous weekend nationally. I don't know, I guess there was a big Martin Luther King whoop-de-doo thing on, what was it, Saturday, Friday, thereabouts. And I know you've been, you know, you and others have been holding the line on the local Food Not Bombs in Santa Cruz with, you know, with one of the main members being kind of put out of commission by an automobile accident. Want to give us an update on what's going on?
Well, you know, I have not been doing well physically myself, so I wasn't down there. On Saturday, I was doing okay. I went to the National Union of the Homeless event that you were at.
Yeah.
But then on Sunday, I was way too sick to go down there, so I don't know what happened down there at that time.
Uh-huh.
And so that's what I know about that. I know there was some person that kind of, you know, we had to deal with changing our position. You know, somebody grabbed one of our cooking knives, you know, knives, and cut somebody after he got beat up by when he was trying to pick up some girl. And he was new to the scene, and it turned out that the woman he was hustling was somebody's girlfriend. But that was the only dramatic news of the weekend that I heard about. But Drew did say and he was so happy to, I mean, what's incredible is it's pretty much the Food Not Bombs had survived Drew's being hit by a car, and he was so happy he went down to watch and everything, both on Saturday and Sunday.
We should say that Drew has been a main person, for those who don't know, who gets up at the crack of dawn every Saturday and Sunday, or used to, and while he was in good shape. And this has gone on for years, while Food Not Bomb. And in fact, he was also, wouldn't you say, a main man, or would you, during the time when Food Not Bombs was serving daily during the COVID scene?
Yeah, that's how he got started. He had some kind of a traffic problem and had to work off hours. So he chose us. Well, actually, at that time, we were basically the only place you could work off your hours for community service, for, you know, court referral. Because everybody else was closed, we were the only people, which was a great thing for us. And so he volunteered. He started like a little bit, and then he just fell in love with it. He came every day, except for on he had appendicitis one time, so he was out for that, but a week or so to recover. But otherwise, he just did it every day. And then when we got to the end of doing it every day, he just kept doing it on the weekend. So he's been our front end person, and boy, he is so loved by the people on the streets. And when they heard he got hit by a car, you know, that everybody pitched in, and it's been this kind of magical thing where people who normally would, you know, kind of just hang around and don't really pitch in, you know, we had like more people helping us set up and then close every since then. And it's like really beautiful. And I would say mostly, you know, many of the people live outside that are pitched in and helped put the whole thing together again. So we didn't miss a beat. Hopefully Drew will be, I know Drew wants to get back there in real time, and actually back to what he was doing, but he's just not up to it right now.
No.
But another month or so, he'll be patched up and full on again.
Excellent. So you're also, you keep do a lot of posting online on Facebook and other places regarding the activities of Food Not Bombs chapters in other cities. Are you still able to do that because you're experiencing some health difficulties yourself, right?
I have, my back was killing me, and then I have a cold that's similar to the flu that people have. And so I was under the, you know, on Sunday morning, I just felt miserable had to deal with that. And I had to cancel my chiropractic appointments, which I made. You know, the back pain continue, and I could find no relief and stuff like that. So that's what happened with that. But I do post, and I've been following. So it's an interesting thing is, for some reason, the police arrested at least two people, maybe more, in Kansas City for serving, you know, for trespassing. And they've been sharing food on that same sidewalk and same, you know, near that same parking lot for 13 years. At the same time, no one bothered it. For some weird reason, the cops came and said that they were trespassing and arrested two of them. Oddly enough, a month before, in November, Thanksgiving, the day after Thanksgiving, they arrested another Food Not Bombs volunteer in Pensacola, Florida, and for serving food after dark. And they've been serving in Martin Luther King Park in Pensacola for 14 years every Friday at 6 o'clock, and it just turned out to be daylight savings time, so their normal meal time had become dark. And then there was a lot of hanky-panky with the city around that, but they burned out on that. I know Kansas City Food Not Bombs went back out there and served, but didn't. No reports of them being harassed after the original arrest, which is the first week in January. And then there are threats to, the cops do come by Homestead, Florida Food Not Bombs and ask them about their permits and say they have to have a permit, but they're like a normal Food Not Bombs group that says screw that. So that's what I know about that. I think a really shocking thing is that David Rovick's entire YouTube channel of music from years and years was deleted by YouTube. That's terrible, man.
Now, what can people do? I was thinking about this myself because I use Rovick's AI stuff. I guess it's called AI Sumo. On my show a lot, which I do mostly once a week, sometimes twice, including flashbacks. But if people want to contribute to David's, you know, can you buy his most recent stuff online still? Is that still possible? What?
I don't really know. All I know is he woke up yesterday and his appeal to was denied. It's incredible that they would do that.
That's the appeal to the mucky mucks who removed his stuff, right?
Yeah, to us from YouTube. Yeah. It's hard to do, man.
You're also you mentioned as that I too, and it was true, we were both at the Union of the Homeless 10th anniversary kind of commemoration of the beginning of the most recent incarnation of the Homeless of the Union, Homeless Union in Salinas, the 10th anniversary that Anthony Prince and Wes White began with their flagpole community and their lawsuits blocking abusive legislation by the Salinas City Council. And they actually held a provided shelter. Well, I should say Wes White provided shelter for essentially 6 months. Every night he would deposit all the bedding, the survival gear, and so forth for homeless, and they would camp right in front of the Salinas City Council to continue to put pressure on them in order to oppose their anti-homeless laws, which they still have and have not gotten any better. In fact, they've probably gotten worse in the sense of police procedures and practices. Or at least,
yeah, that was a really inspiring event, and I know Alicia and I are going to, you know, we're trying to really get the union started again. Unfortunately, I have to go because I have to get this chiropractic thing right now.
All right, well, so, good luck with the chiro, and we'll be back to harass you later.
Okay, bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
The last week of December was like any other week, or month, or hour since October 2023, in that our attention is never far from the ever-unfolding annihilation of Gaza and the famine, disease, and death within it. Over these years, with so few outsiders able to get in, and so few people from Gaza able to go anywhere, we on the outside have relied partially on the many powerful audio diaries that people inside and outside Gaza have collaborated on making and disseminating. There have been so many of these that include voices of the dead. In so many cases, people who considered themselves the walking dead, the imminently about to be targeted and killed, and then they were. If you have ever received someone's last message, or a message from someone you might have been in touch with, who wanted to let you know of the sudden death of that person, it is a very sobering experience, one that allows for little option but to face up to the horrors.
Picture this, the Mediterranean Sea. On the shore, a demolished city. A row of buildings reaching jagged in the air. One open window with a ragged child there. Saying this will be the last message I send. This is what it looks like at the end. Picture this, a row of body bags. Look at her, this child wrapped in rags. As she tries to stay warm beneath a tattered plastic sheet. With nothing covered.
Now here's a report or two from the last Huff meeting, which I remind all you folks out there, in case you want to come, it's Thursdays 1:30 to 3:30, Sub Rosa Cafe. Help us scheme, plan, and hear what's going on as well.
There was a Coral Street sweep, which Troy observed.
I observed it. I rolled up after they'd already set up the Gestapo barriers and stuff.
Tell me about that.
When I pulled up yesterday morning, they had police crime scene tape up. They had it sectioned off, so we're pretty much the only place you could go with freely without being worried about being inhibited is through the parking lot across the street from the shelter into the where the kiosk is, the security kiosk. Everything else was cordoned off. They had cops left and right, like everywhere, and they were just dumping stuff in. A friend of mine told me last night that they showed up a day early and an hour later than they were supposed to. Because it said, like, Thursday at 8 a.m. It said they showed up Wednesday at 9 a.m.
I thought they were here at, like, 7.
Or, I don't know what's up, but I'm saying they showed up. They showed up the wrong times. They showed up at the wrong time, basically. And told everybody what you can grab. Her tent and sleeping area started sliding off of the cart that she had set up, and a friend of hers grabbed it, and the cop told him, fuck off. She said, but that's my dog's home. Mm. Like, that's their shelter. Their food is in there. Fuck off. After being told whatever you can grab, and her friend is steady grabbing, and basically was told, fuck off or you're going to jail.
How many cops?
Oh, there were a shit ton of cops down there. I mean, I couldn't swing a dead cat without hitting at least three of them.
And how many, what time did you show up?
I showed up somewhere between 8:30 and 9:30.
Yeah, they were almost done by that time.
Yeah, and like, they were just, it looked, what I saw at one point, it looked like they were just taking backhoes and dumping them into dump trucks who were lock, stock, and ready to rock on just whatever's dumped in, just taking off. And yeah, if you weren't lucky enough to have your shit out of there,
you can't have possession.
Did you see any particular pieces of valuable property being taken?
I didn't focus that much on it. I was more focused on, wow, I cannot believe this is happening right now. Yeah. Why are they coming in a day early? Why are they being so extreme with their sweeping? It was disappointing and heartbreaking, to say the least, that something like that could happen in this country. And not just happen in this country, but be condoned by our administration. I use that term loosely.
So, did anybody come back today to see how many people had returned?
Oh, last night it was business as usual. Like almost everybody. I was like, yep. They were like, fuck you. You can't get rid of us that easy. And it wasn't as populated as normally, but it was still fairly populated.
A lot of people have to get new places so they go.
I'm sorry, Troy, say that again.
A lot of people have to get new spots so they go further away and get to the forest and bounce around like we always do.
The forest is going to be the next target. I know it is.
Yeah.
The where?
The forest is going to be the next target.
We're lucky to escape with our lives.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So far.
So I talked to Alicia Cool this morning. Before we go back to the subject that we started with, I was going to give a report on the 10th anniversary homeless union. We've got at least four people here who went to it. Frog, Gloria, me and Laura Tucker. I mean, Laura Chatham, sorry, Laura. And one who wanted to come but wasn't feeling well. How are you doing? You feeling better, Nick?
Yeah, I'm feeling a lot better.
Excellent.
I'm just run down.
He's like, I have ice cream now. Ice cream makes everything better.
That's a good time.
Apparently so.
So
there's five of us, actually. Maybe four of us. One, two, three, four.
I wasn't even eating. In my street parents.
So I don't know. Does anyone want to give a report on what went down, what they liked about it, what they didn't?
Sure.
If we want to talk about it at all.
I'd like to mention that I thought it was really cool to have Liz Theoharis, the co-chair of the Poor People's Campaign, with Dr. Reverend Barber, come and do, like, I mean, she spoke with us. The video, you know, there's a 7-hour video that was put up, but you can jump around. And the only thing I got to see so far was of that video, which was so fun. She led us all in that song about take back. I'm going to take back my dignity. I'm going to take back my humanity.
I've heard of those things. What are those? What are they?
You heard about those? Those are interesting things.
Aren't those called antiquarian words?
They're outdated.
The whole thing was really, it was very inspiring to have people there who've lived through so many different situations sharing what, you know, things that had happened back 20, 30, 40 years ago in some cases. I thought it was totally a fun, cool meeting.
That was well attended. Well attended.
There were about 60 or 70 people.
Well, that's pretty good for
statewide. Yeah, I'd say so. Wes pretty much organized it on his own.
Yeah.
Frog, what was your take on this? Have you finished that? Laura, did you want more to say? Or?
I think somebody else could say something. I made a start.
I definitely experienced both ends of the feelings spectrum. I had loads of fun. I was super glad I went. I had loads of fun. I thought it was awesome. But also, at the beginning, the first thing, I came a little bit late, so probably wasn't the first thing. But one of the first things that happened was this skit that me and others didn't know was gonna go on, where fake cops come in and evict folks.
Oh wow!
And,
oh
yeah!
Real,
wow! Yeah. I thought for a second I thought it was real.
Yeah, you know? I could see that being the triggering moment.
Yeah. So that was.
And if you want to actually see and hear the live stream of the whole event that happened in Salinas a week ago, 10th anniversary of the National Homeless Union revival, restarting of it, what you will, go to the YouTube and then put in John, J-O-H-N, Doe, D-O-E, 13-K, one word, D-O-E, and then 13-K, all as one word. So you have two words, John, and then Doe, 13-K, and you'll find this series of speakers and reports about homeless resistance in different cities, which, if you care about that issue, is it's inspiring, it's educational. I wish more had been done, but
former Israeli and vocal opponent of Israel Today, Miko Peled, was on Al Jazeera. The interviewer was asking him about all the news about Hamas refusing to disarm, as if there's anyone even there for such a process to take place. Miko instead talked about the need for Israel to disarm, stating what should, of course, be obvious, and not at all some kind of exceptional viewpoint. He put forward the notion that it should not be the people under occupation, living within a besieged, walled ghetto, who should be the ones needing to disarm. Rather, the occupying power, the one that was committing genocide of the occupied people, was the one that needed to disarm. And this hypothetical disarmament is something that needs to be implemented by others. such as by those Western powers that seem to be unable to do anything beyond empty gestures, involving the recognition of a nation that has already been either subsumed or demolished by another, while at home they jail the dissidents for holding signs deemed to be anti-Semitic.
Today is the 24th of January, 2026, around 4 o'clock in the afternoon. It's a indoor Sunday for me, but for you, Keith McHenry, on the other end of the line, it's been an outdoor day?
Yeah. We started out with the 8 o'clock set up at the town clock, and I bought a bunch of condiments and stuff and other supplies at U.S., restaurant supply to make sure we have that for today, but we're trying to maneuver around the fact that we've lost Drew temporarily, since he was our front end guy who was, you know, for 5 years have been setting up the canopies and stuff. But he got hit by a car over at Trader Joe's in 41st, and he's still recovering.
This is the usual Saturday and Sunday meal that runs, at least for the public, from about 12 to 3, right, for those who don't know?
Correct, yeah, we're at the town clock every Saturday and Sunday from 12 to 3. We start setting up around 8, though, because we want to make sure we get the parking spaces for the van and the trailer. And it takes a while to set up anyway. And then we did that, and I've gotten a really nice donation I bought a bunch of beans for one kitchen, and I had to deliver it to that kitchen, and I had all kinds of donations from another bakery donated tons of supplies, so we did the cooking, we had all kinds of back and forth, basically, from the kitchen to town clock. And when I got there, a young woman you could tell she was freezing and she wanted a sleeping bag, so I told her I'd get her that. We got the sleeping bag to her later in the afternoon.
I understand there was a large sweep at Coral Street on Wednesday morning. Some people, I mean, you in fact mentioned it in a post you put out, suggesting this was a cynical move done, although to me, in a way, it's kind of baffling, to bolster the upcoming point in time count coming up in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, well, it actually was just a regular sweep, but now what they're talking about, see, I'm getting some rumors that they're going to try to just keep people from camping at all in front of Coral Street. But people eventually did wander back, and there was like 120 tents there when I last passed by. So
when was that?
That was yesterday. So
so they came back.
They came back after the Wednesday sweep. But what we're concerned is that the next sweep will be right before the point in time count. And what my argument is that Fred Keeley last year was like, went down by, I guess maybe 2 years ago, we went down, reduced the homeless problem by 37%. Isn't that great? There's 37% less homeless in town. And I guess the overall reduction was 20%.
Fastlane Fred, our mayor, you're quoting him?
Yeah. So he was like, because we were doing a no sweeps protest outside of when they were reading it can happen here by, spaced out the name of the famous author.
Sinclair Lewis.
Yeah, Sinclair Lewis. It was this Liberal Democratic Party thing where they're trying to get people to vote for Kamala Harris and saying that Trump would become just as Trump is now. But, the reality is that probably it's going to be awful no matter who got in power. And that's what I think they're potentially, they want to show the taxpayers that all this anti-homeless money that they're spending is doing really great work and getting people into housing and blah, blah, blah. That's what, and it actually ended up getting quoted in an article in Lookout today. That was interesting.
Interesting. I've got to take a look at that article. That's, but before I go looking for it, let me explain to you the strange contradiction that I see with the idea of running off the homeless from the Coral Street encampment on the between Coral and 9 and Highway 9 and Fern Street, I guess it's and Limekiln, I think it is, not Fern Street.
Yeah, all those streets, they kick everybody out.
Yeah, and so they're doing this because they want to make it appear with less homeless people on the street when the point count is happening that, as you were saying, eliminating the homeless, the visible homeless, which of course is the main problem for middle class folks, and some folks are complaining to the politicians. But doesn't this also cut back the amount of resources they get? Because don't they get resources based on the supposed number of homeless people that they process or that are present? So that they, in other words, isn't that a factor? It seems contradictory to me. If I'm right, I don't have any direct.
Yeah, well, it's a weird thing because I think the HUD funding allegedly is related on to the percentage of homeless people in your town. All right, and allegedly, if you had more homeless people, then you would get more funding through HUD. But it does. It's hard to say whether that is really where the money is for these people, because maybe the money is some other way. So Jeff Bezos gave them like a few million dollars, these guys like that. So I don't know. Maybe also there is HUD funding was being cut anyway, even under Biden, so maybe they didn't feel that having high numbers to get money from HUD was the most important aspect. But you're right. I mean, that seemed like in that sense that would make sense. Mm-hmm. But quite possibly that it's more the impression to the local residents that are paying taxes that they want to impress. Who knows? But I think you're right. I mean, it could be the other way, just like what you're saying.
Now, has there been any? Do you have any contact with any of the folks who returned to Coral Street? Because it looks like
they are not discouraging people from returning. But I'd also heard, I think it was from activist Troy, that there was sort of either increased brutality and seizure of property, although I didn't get much in the way of specific examples, and also there was inappropriate, or should we say misleading, warning to the people that they said they were going to come at a certain hour and they came a half an hour early, actually a day early and a half an hour early, usually the sweeps being on Thursday rather than on Wednesday, as I recall being told, but I don't remember who told me that. Do you have any information about that?
Well, I did hear similar things that basically, and then the Sentinel article and the other Lookout article do point to the fact that the sweep was on Wednesday when it was in the past on another day. I would not be surprised if Troy was right. Nikki today was like, oh, did you hear? Did you hear? They're not going to let people back on Coral Street. And so there's so I don't know if there's a rumor that they're going to just ban, you know, come up with some new rule that you just basically can never come back there or not. But, you know, it's a mixed bag. You know how it is, like people living on the street and a rumor can get started. And,
well, I know what one thing Troy said, excuse me for interrupting you there, Keith, was that there were bolsters or barriers being put up. When he came to the sort of later in the morning on Wednesday, this last Wednesday, when he saw sort of the outcome of the sweep, suggesting that it might be made harder. But you were by there after the sweep, and you saw what you say 120 tents didn't look like people were being driven away, right?
Right. It was interesting. In fact, some seem like there are, you know, were pretty elaborate setups. You know, for being that fast, you know, like in one day, there's one person had a whole bunch of tarps all attached to a fence and everything. And so the people were kind of snapped back too. But I also did see more people like, there's a person, there's been people camping like at Java Juice downtown, you know, with a pup tent just right in the middle of the sidewalk. And then, everybody keeps getting swept pretty fast from all that. And, I hope they don't seal off Coral Street and, you know, just say you can't be there, and then where everybody's going
to
be.
So, I think what either he or another individual who came to the meeting who preferred not to be named mentioned was that these barriers that were put up allowed a sort of a very narrow entranceway into the what I call funding matters, what they call housing matters, the poverty industrial complex set of buildings, so which includes the Paul Lee Loft and I guess the Reveille Family Center, and I guess I don't know what they call the pallets these days. They got a name for that yet? I don't know what the.
I don't know what that is. I don't know what they're meaning for.
But anyway, he suggested it was sort of an unusual setup, that it seemed that people were sort of. In other areas, they were being walled off, but apparently you didn't see any. Did you see anything like that looked like more barriers than usual when you went by on Thursday?
Yeah, there were definitely those orange plastic, heavy plastic barriers were, and they're brand new, you know, so yeah, they just bought them from somewhere, I don't know. So yeah, those were there, but then people would squish their tents between them and the fence.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I was seeing.
Any conversations?
Like I say, though, there is a rumor that they're going to seal off Coral Street and not let people camp there anymore.
Right.
So.
Is any? Were you at? I know you were recovering from a couple of ailments when I talked to you last. But were you? Did you spend any time talking to people today about that last sweep and how it went? Was it more difficult than previous sweeps? Was there more threats given? Was it done more harshly, or was it sort of just the routine, you know, wash, rinse, dry, repeat, that sort of thing?
I didn't get to talk to anybody about that because I was in and out. I was kept having to run errands like crazy, so I didn't get, other than talking to Nikki, who had her opinion about what was going on, I didn't really connect.
Okay.
Well, one of the and Troy wanted to talk to me, and I stupidly should have stepped back, came back, and talked to him, but he was gone by the time I came back.
He's a fast moving guy.
Yeah.
One minute he's there, next he's gone. All day I've been keeping an eye a little bit, or just sort of glued addictively to the murder scene of Alex Petit in Minnesota. You know.
Yeah, that's really. I only heard rumor of it until I got home, and I just watched the videos of it. It was interesting because Kevin emailed me, Kevin Rothschild. I had an email from him in a long time, and I just could see it on my cell phone saying, "Oh yeah, and a shooting of the another angle of the video of the shooting, ice shooting in Minneapolis." So I was assuming that was another angle of the shooting of Renee Good. Had no idea what that was about until later on. I was talking to Andrea McHenry, my ex, and she was telling me about this shooting because I've been, you know, just doing food up bombs like crazy. Mm-hmm. You know, up in the kitchen, I met with the new owners of the property and all that, and just gave them a tour of the whole place and all that. So,
is the kitchen looking pretty secure, by the way? Let me say an ask in passing.
Yeah, everything looks good. And we had a really good cooking crew today. It was real fun. Took a picture of the salad. The salad looked beautiful. And, yeah, worked really well. Cal's doing a great job.
I was wondering, with the demonstrations that actually began very soon after the killing of Good, the woman murdered by, that's how I saw it, by the ICE agents. This one was even more overt, the killing of this nurse guy. Apparently he was a nurse, Alexander Petit, or Alex Petit. Probably have his name wrong slightly, but
I saw like videos from a bunch of different directions.
Me too.
That was really hardcore, and he just got a video camera, standing there with a video camera.
I mean, he was armed.
And then he went to help the person or something, got attacked.
He was
shot.
After they shoved a woman, he tried to help her get up, and they took him down. I guess. A clump of them, and of course they later showed a gun that he had with him, they said, but all the video don't show him drawing a gun, so there's no indication that it was self-defense. Anyway, there's been a lot of, you know, it'll be no doubt a lot of speculation and examination of, you know, how outrageous it was, though of course the Republican authorities, Trump and his underlings all say it's, so, you know, it was self-defense by a. This was a terrorist who had set out to terrorize the ICE agents.
I know. It's so crazy. And then the video of the cops shooting this poor unarmed guy in San Diego this morning, too. He's on his knees with his hands up. And they're, like, actually, you know, like, way behind him. You know, what? 20 feet away from him, maybe more, and it's like, bam, 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 just take the guy out, shoot him in the back, and kill him.
I haven't heard about that, but I did see a San Jose Mercury News headline today had another shooting. Yes.
Yeah, the cop shot some person there. Yeah, killed the guy there. Yeah, like 3 days ago or something.
I was just wondering.
The cops are just killing people, like, publicly, so that, like, to terrorize the public. It's insane.
Have you... there was a very quick response to the Good killing. Maybe it wasn't that quick. I got the impression somehow it was quick. I know I missed it. A demonstration formed at the town clock, which, do you know if any such thing is happening in this most recent killing that happened this morning?
Oh, I haven't heard of anything. It seemed like there should be something there. I don't know if there is anything there. Maybe we will, I'll talk amongst the Food Up Bombs people and we do something tomorrow or something. Let's see what, because we're already there. But,
that's true.
Yeah, because this is like really outrageous. But see, I was just only learning about it on my way home, so I didn't know.
You were in the midst of the business of, you know, dealing with the food operation that actually, it's always my
my basis for explaining, you know, why there isn't a homeless union activity on this and that is because, you know, you and Alicia Kuhl both have your hands full, whether you're the president, the vice president, the secretary of what I regard as a, as of yet, non-existent Santa Cruz homeless union organization. Still, that's because, you know, you're doing something that's equally important. I'd like to see more people doing other stuff, and indeed we're talking about holding, we've actually planning to do a to do an event at the Sub Rosa Cafe, which is another showing of the video by, I guess it's Malia, about Mama Shannon and her life and times.
Yeah, that's really good. Woman. Do you have any details on the homeless person that was stabbed to death in San Lorenzo Park like 2 days ago?
I haven't even heard about that. What have you heard?
All I know is that somebody was stabbed to death there, and it was a homeless person, and at the time I heard about, they hadn't captured anybody that was responsible. So, anyway, that's all I know.
Huh, and you heard that through, what, just one individual report, or...
Who told me that? I don't know who that was. I forget who that was. Not weird. Where was I when they were talking to me about it? It definitely was a person that was had credibility.
Uh-huh.
I can't remember now. Now that you mentioned, I can't remember who it was.
Well, you could, if you could, if you find out anything more, you could, and well, anybody else wants to decide to. How did you describe it? Front line, front to manage, front. Front an event.
Event coordinator or something like that.
You said the word earlier. I should have written it down. Because you've used it repeatedly in different contexts. But
bottom liner.
Close, but
that's what we call our kitchen. Is what we call it.
The word was front something when you.
Front like front office.
Close, but not the same. But in any case, someone who can actually do the main job of organizing or something. Usually, it's you. You're out there doing it, pain, body pain notwithstanding.
And then, just after Netanyahu visited Mar-a-Lago, the Israeli government announced that scores of aid agencies that had been at least nominally operating in the Gaza Strip would soon have to cease operations. Why? Because they refused to hand over details of their Palestinian employees, given the proven proclivity of the IDF to target aid workers, nurses, doctors, and anyone else involved with helping Palestinians survive for assassination. It is, of course, unequivocally, the responsibility of the occupying power to not only allow the occupied population to have access to food, medicine, and shelter, but to actually provide these things. Instead, Israel is collectively punishing the entire population of Gaza by preventing them from having access to shelter, food, water, medicine, or any of the other basic necessities for life. Theoretically, at least until Hamas finds the body of an Israeli captive who was killed by Israeli bombardment, along with his captors, so that now nobody knows where the bodies of the captive or his captors might be. But until that body is eventually found, although Israel is not allowing bulldozers or other equipment vital to such a search to get into Gaza, until that body is found, all of the children of Gaza must starve. This is literally the decision being made by the Israeli leadership, and the fact that the Western media fails to report it that way is nothing short of Holocaust denial. But what the fascists in power in Israel are doing to the people whose land they occupy is starving their children to death. Right now, while we watch it on Al Jazeera, as long as there are any journalists left alive in Gaza, as long as there are any journalists left alive in Gaza.
There was supposedly a ceasefire, except there never was. It's the occupation army doing as it does. Whatever them in the nest set, tell them to another bunker bust and bomb dropped on you. If they handed over the bodies of the hostages killed after 2 years of bombing as the Zionists willed, the Palestinians would maybe be allowed to eat. But until they find that body beneath the street, cut the aid off and they talk about some kind of phase, obsessed by some kind of Islel craze, pretending aid agencies should withhold food from the resistance if that's what they're told. On the media they don't say collective punishment, they blame occupied people for where their children went. The Israelis say they will carefully examine who was killed by bombing, who was killed by famine. Starved so many, and then by exposure, so many more buried by bulldozers, buried by bombs and by the West, along with any notion of decency it could ever attest. They killed 500 aid workers already, now they want to keep the number steady of aid workers they assassinate with bombs shipped from the United States. The lucky aid.
One of our Huff activists, Gloria, has decided to take the bull by the horns and arrange this Malia event. The reason for this video event of this movie of Mama Shannon, which has already been played before at the Del Mar and the Tannery and so forth, and apparently it's up for videoing at different places as well. But what's the idea being that because of the upcoming closure of services and the likely cutoff of bathrooms and showers and water and mail and everything else you can think of, or at least many things except for those who are in the privileged program at Coral Street at the Funding Matters complex, Housing Matters as they call it. Something has to be done immediately, along with protests around the MH Can closure, even though the money has been appropriated by the county. And one way to do that is to, announce a particular homeless viewing of this video, which would be happening, I guess, in late February. This is how at least Huffsters were planning to do it. I know as a endlessly huffing Huffster, I was there at the meeting where they discussed it and decided on it. And I guess this might be something. The idea, I don't see much protest generated about. We're not generating much protest around this incredible cutoff of services, and I guess.
Well, we should do something, but.
You got to have people who are willing to organize it and do it. I guess the hope of some folks organizing this, Gloria's hope, and the hope of those at the Huff meeting, was that people will come to this video and. And there'll be some rabble rousers, and we'll be announcing additional protest events. Maybe, I don't know, tabling and demonstrating in front of the homeless. Used to call it the Homeless Services Center. I called it the Lack of Services Center. But the Funding Matters, the Housing Matters complex, because it's not only is it the place where $4 million is going. What is it? I'm not sure. $4 million every year, or $4 million for 3 years.
The four million homeless encampment resolution grant was $4 million, maybe almost $500,000, something in that area, but definitely over $4 million. And it was for clearing the camp for the streets around Harvey West, is how they put it, for 2 years. So I don't know when that should be burned up soon, and so that's what that was for. But part of it could have actually been theoretically advertised that the home encampment resolution grant would be not just sweeping the homeless, but that there'd be resolution, which would be housing, right? But that, first of all, $4 million over 2 years isn't very much for that, clearly, they don't really seem to have much of an interest in doing that. So, so that's what that's about. But there might be more homeless resolution, more encampment resolution grants in the, that we don't know about or haven't been advertised or announced or whatever that might be used for more anti-homeless stuff. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the hope is, this sort of enthused some people who hadn't been active before in Huff that active to start doing research on the exact expenditures that the Housing Matters has actually done over the last year or 2 years. I put in a Public Records Act request yesterday, and also some other activists have come forward. The what do we call the Van Dwellers group that's run by Julie? And I'm trying to think of, she has a website that apparently is concerned with the rights of people who live in their vehicles.
Right. What is that like?
And she's very apparently has been doing Public Records Act requests for many years, or at least some. And she sent me a very elaborate and off to some of the other Huff activists who want to put in requests at the county basis, you know, to Robert Ratner and others. And also I'm been delegated to make a plea to Phil Kramer, my old buddy. He's, of course, the head of the chair, the executive director of Housing Matters, Funding Matters. So anyway, there may be some, you know, at least preliminary information gathering that's happening that may, I don't know, it's hard to think what will mobilize the community. I mean, apparently shooting people dead who are peacefully protest or even angrily protesting, but still, you know, not throwing anything other than snowballs at the cops, or in this case at the, you know, the agents, the ICE agents in Minnesota. I don't know what will move people. That can move them, I guess, if people get shot dead in their own town.
Who knows what this... This seems like everything is going very wacky, man. It seems like they're wanting to get a civil war going so they can do their, you know, Insurrection Act, or whatever the hell it is that they're trying to do. And some people think that it's could be around the fact the U.S. is about to go to war and the global economy is crashing, and it's like they just want to get ready to have a clamp down, and they figure they shoot a few people now, then that'll scare people off, and they can maintain control. That's incredible.
It does seem to enrage people, though. In what is it? Is it Minneapolis in Minnesota where the killings happened? I'm not sure.
Yeah, the protests today are massive, just like the general strike was yesterday. And there was like several hundred thousand people came out, and it was 10 below zero. I mean, yeah, 10 below zero Fahrenheit. That's like hardcore. And then that was incredible. Now I'm sure there could be even more. There's call for a nationwide general strike, but you know, I don't know if the unions are going to do that. But Minnesota, and particularly Minneapolis, are a pretty interesting and different kind of state from the rest of the country. Minneapolis itself, at one point, had the most worker-owned retail facilities, like restaurants, stores, grocery stores, things like that at one time, and any other and they've had that history for like decades, so that is that's an interesting thing. So a general strike there it's pretty impressive. They got all these mainstream unions to agree to it, and they shut down the state yesterday. And now the protesters really hardcore with the amount of tear gas that's being used against them today. Although that's been generally the case in the past too, but now it's like way out of control. So I guess they're also trying to do this in Maine right now, so they're kind of just going around attacking people and.
Have you heard any reports from Food Not Bombs chapters and any of those places about how this is impacting homeless people there? I mean, I guess
I haven't. No, and we've been trying to connect. We have one the Winnipeg Food Not Bombs has been corresponding with the Minneapolis Food Not Bombs a bit, but I haven't heard anything from Minneapolis Food Not Bombs myself. But I suspect they're like way busy, and because the Minneapolis, the Winnipeg people said that they did get a response back, but they're kind of waiting to find out how the rest of the movement can help them out. So,
now, how does Food Not Bombs fare in icy weather?
Oh, it can be really hard serving food in icy weather. So what we some of the groups under this storm that's happening in the east today, which seems to be more rural than normal, might be trying to find a way to get indoors, or might even like end up canceling. But in most cases, they keep going, and we put the food in big giant ice chests to keep it warm, and typically, unless the snow is real bad and just too dangerous for people to be outside, including the people living outside, then they do what they can and try to get an indoor place. It's hardcore, man.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
What a trip.
Any other reports from anywhere in the world you want to pass on regarding... Or I mean, really, I'd revert. If you have anything about Santa Cruz you've learned recently, you often have spoken about when you go into town early, you see people in doorways and so forth, and under lean-tos. Any reports about folks in their vehicles or folks in city parking lots or things of that sort?
Well, like I say, there was an interesting number of puff tents in unusual places, like around Java Juice and stuff like that, that hadn't been kicked out, recently. So I thought that was interesting. But then there's been all these weird things. Like, for instance, there was a ton of tents over by what we call Ross Camp, but only one or two were in where Ross Camp was, on that side of the fence. But a bunch all along there, but they're gone. I don't know what happened to that. So that's going on. And we're getting oversized vehicle tickets where we've been parking for years over by the soup kitchen with our trailer in the Food Not Bombs van. But then we got $150 worth of tickets. So now we keep having to move the van to our kitchen, which is not really easy because the drivers currently that are driving the van, we have to go up and pick them up and bring them back down. And so it takes two people to deal with that. Whereas before, Drew could just walk around the corner and get the van and come back. And he could come in by bus and everything was chill. So, it's what a tragedy. It's like really frustrating that they do that to us. So it's now added this whole other, and it's weird that it's the large vehicle ordinance that's being used against us. Anyway, that's what's going on.
Well, I know Watsonville recently passed a similar ordinance.
Yeah, isn't that sick? It's happening everywhere. As more and more people are likely to become homeless and move into their,
On the other hand, the Union of the Homeless had a large 10th anniversary ceremony in Salinas that you and I both attended. You as featured speaker, me as a grumbling critic in the back. And so I'm wondering, has anything come out of that as far as you know yet? Any reports, any link-ups? I'd kind of hoped that there would be some kind of, well, I didn't really hoped because I have a rather gloomy view of... the union, because of my past experiences, but you guys have done, well, us guys too. We've been doing it together, or side by side, or in parallel. Anthony's done a lot of good stuff. Anthony Prince, the attorney, perhaps not so good, not some of the not so good stuff in terms of internal authoritarianism in the union. But I'm just wondering, has anything come out of it like a mutual aid, other than a lot of bric-a-brac, a firecracker, sis, boom, bah, we have a pledge, and we got a lot of T-shirts I'm not going to reduce it to that because there are a lot of interesting reports at that.
Well, it seemed to really kick Alicia into gear, so that's really good. She's stepped up a clothing drive for the union. We're trying to get a meeting to get regular meetings. We've got we're going to start advertising case management. She wants to start a whole program with just nothing but that. Because he has a lot of knowledge in that from having worked for Encompass and having, been on the streets. So, there seemed to be a lot more enthusiasm. It was very inspiring, and it definitely inspired Alicia, so that's really cool.
A lot of the speeches were, very, particularly the speeches from people from the individual chapters. I mean, that was something that was interesting. In fact, almost too much to take in, but of course the whole thing, for those who are interested, is available on the YouTube channel that Wes White has set up under John Doe 13K. If you go to the YouTube, click on YouTube, and then you go and put in John, and then the next word, Doe 13K, and then look for this 10th anniversary. It's a 9-hour video, I believe. You can actually hear people, and it's quite audible. In fact, maybe even more audible than it was for those who came.
Yeah, that's so cool. And I've been sharing that on Facebook and everything. And it was interesting. There was a reading of all the union locals in the state. There's a lot of them, a lot more than I even thought there was. And so that was really cool. And then and a lot of them were doing all kinds of amazing things. Like Vallejo had a whole trip going on, and I didn't even know there was a Vallejo.
Vallejo had the most recent decision that actually challenged the Grants Pass versus Johnson overturning of the right to not be ticketed if you haven't got a shelter,
It was sounding really good, what they were getting done. So it's pretty cool. It really is. And seems like I'm kind of amazed that the economy hasn't completely collapsed yet for everybody. It's collapsed for many millions of Americans, but it seems like it's about to really, gold went to 5,000 an ounce, which is the highest it's ever been. The U.S. dollar devaluated to the lowest level in, since the 70s or something, and Japan's economy's crashing, and there's flight of U.S. treasuries like crazy. Silver's 100 now an ounce, and all that. And what that is not that you're going to own any silver or gold, needless to say, but it just shows the people with money are like freaking out, and they're buying stuff they think will protect them. An economic downturn, and particularly entire governments are buying all this stuff. So it's really hardcore. So
anything you notice or have heard about coming up at the next Santa Cruz Shitty Council meeting, which is, of course, if you're listening to this on Sunday, it would be the 24th or the 25th, one of the two. If you're listening to this on
what's today? The 24th is today. Oh my God!
Yeah, 25th is this Sunday. So it'll be the 27th. Will be the shitty city council meeting. I call it the shitty council. Also, I think the board of supervisors or stupid vipers, as I also call them when I get cranky. I haven't seen anything in particular that has struck me yet, and actually, I haven't been looking as much as I might have. But perhaps you've noticed anything, because I know you're a devoted city council watcher.
Well, I haven't, no.
No, I mean,
I've had a whole other world to be dealing with, so I haven't done that. But everyone, if something comes by my desk here, then I, woohoo, I'm cranking.
If I hear of anything exciting, I hope I have the motivation to give you a call and tell you about it, since you're taking the time to tell me this and that, and I'll be putting this out on free radio on the 25th. The 24th.
Okay, well, the 25th. That sounds like a lot of fun.
All right. Well, I will let you go, and goodbye, good luck, and thank you, man.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Take care of it. Yeah.
writing with Aitsuno, singing with a different voice, and having so much flexibility to play with different musical styles, instruments, etc., we create different sorts of songs than David would ever write by himself. If you were thinking it was going to be a song he was going to sing himself, and try to bring to life from within the confines of his musical abilities, along with writing songs from different angles and on different subjects than he has played with in the past, another thing we've often done is to revisit themes David has previously written songs about. That's most definitely what we're doing with this one. What if a song could be a forge? If it reminds you thematically of songs like, if a song could make your troubles go away, or if a song could raise an army, it reminds us of those songs too. Perhaps we're even plagiarizing ourselves.
It could make us all like new, so that we could get along like we were meant to do. Brought up to the heat when the iron is all molten, it becomes as malleable as a heart made of emotion. What if a song could be a forge and it could make a person whole, like a hammer can reshape anything given time and cold? I would make a heartbeat stronger than ever before. It'd be so full of goodness, no room for anymore. Building walls. What if a song could be a forge? I'd make eyes so clear they could see beyond the borders with the clarity of here. I'd make ears of such design they'd hear the winds blow in the sky. They'd hear each mother singing their child a lullaby. What if a song building walls. What we have in common across humanity, to see that I is just a part of a beautiful we. What if a song could be a forge, like a blacksmith for your soul, that only works for building bridges and not for building walls?
And that's about it for the show as far as the 2026, well, the January 25th edition of it goes. Now we jump to the flashback, which is a flashback to October 11th, 2015. But wait, actually that show was itself a flashback almost in its entirety. I think it was in its entirety. Except for some stuff that I'm not playing because it wasn't really relevant to my show, to March 17th, 2002, which was, I think it's about 2 days after what for me was a famous incident that occupied me for then coming and going for about 11 years after, maybe a little longer, maybe a little shorter, the infamous Heil Krohn episode. Mayor Christopher Krohn of the Santa Cruz City Council, under prompting from Councilmember Tim Fitzmaurice, had me arrested for silently raising my arm off to the side in a non-disruptive gesture indicating, it was a mock Nazi salute indicating you're acting like a bunch of fascists, after Krohn had first promised to provide half an hour of public testimony time at the oral communications period, the period that is before the normal city council meeting, usually, at least in the evening, that was the custom. And then he essentially cut off the last three speakers before that time was up, who were actually dissident critical speakers. I was one of them. Michael Tomasi was another, and Susan Zeman was the third. Actually, I was the third, and Zeman was the second. He threatened to arrest Zeman, and he did have bailiff or officer sort of supposedly maintaining order or thugging around in the event that people didn't jump when the city council barked. That's my Prips dramatic way of putting it. Escorted out of the room, and the Michael Tomasi was escorted out of the room. I was the last would-be speaker, and I just simply raised my arm with a smile. I made a mock, brief Nazi salute from the side, where I'd been standing in line waiting to speak, at which point Tim Fitzmaurice directed Christopher Krohn. He was up on the dais. The two of them, of course, were part of the seven-member city council running the meeting. Said, Mr. Norris has just made a disrespectful gesture. I demand he or suggest he be removed or directed to leave. At which point Krohn obediently told me that I should leave, and I replied, no, and in essence, I have a right to be here. This is a public city council meeting. I'm not disrupting the meeting. And I walked over and sat down, which they then recessed the meeting at the instigation of Councilmember Kennedy. And I was, during the recess, arrested by Officer Butchie Baker, Lauren Baker, Sticky Fingers Butchie, as we used to call him after he'd been accused, with some credibility, in my view, of molesting 10 women in the course of his duties by improperly searching them, many of them, or at least some of them, homeless women. And I was held for, I don't know, 8 or 9 hours, and so we sued. First, we just asked for an apology. Kate Wells and an attorney, David Beauvais, took the case, but they refused to apologize, and so we took the case all the way up to, well, they took it to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court declined to hear it, and eventually to trial 12 years later. You're going to hear all this in the description on March 17th. Well, you won't hear the subsequent history. You'll hear what happened from my perspective at the actual hearing, which I just described for you already. And there's a lot of other stuff in this, too. Prior city council rights violations against me, particularly because they didn't like what I had to say about their procedures and behavior, which was, of course, to exclude and to silence and to sideline any kind of homeless civil rights presentations, or to point out that their appropriations of large amounts of money elsewhere impacted their failure to and their claim of pleading poverty, and that they couldn't help homeless people because their budgets were so strained, or they're doing all they could, or they're doing the best they could, as then Mayor Rotkin, well, it wasn't mayor at this time, it was Krohn who was mayor, but he was like a six-time mayor, was always claiming that they were the best in the West, or the best in the country, or doing everything they could, no worse than any other country. any other state. Countries, I think, were better. But and then you have in-studio guest, I call him in these notes, High Ground Jerry Henry, on Alibaba's Cafe. It was a small, I guess it's now, I don't think it's a public information booth. I think it's a commercial booth that was right near where the old New Leaf Market was. New Leaf has been moved out to the Ross Center, but the kiosk is still there. Alibaba is the guy who ran it, and he's apparently very determined to, I would call it, sanitize the area around his cafe, play his own kind of music, limit any opposition political discussion. And he, we get to hear about all that from Jerry Henry. Scott Rhodes, who's Jerry Henry's kind of sidekick, talks about the reform of the sleeping ban in parks. Both discuss the repression that Henry originally, I guess, he may have met Rhodes there, or he certainly became his champion, defending Rhodes and other youth out at the Aptos Rancho Del Mar Shopping Center. Who wanted to be able, near the old Safeway, I guess Safeway is still there, and the old coffee roasting company, which I don't think is there anymore, to be able to linger outside and congregate. It was sort of a congregating place. And some of the businesses didn't like that, and they put in a sheriff's substation. The sheriffs did to discourage this, or maybe they were planning to anyway. And you get to hear about Amy, well, you get to hear about the how that all went down, and Henry got arrested, taken to court, fought long court battles, and he discusses, I think, some of that. And we hear Amy Courtney, Bedsheets Bandista, as I apparently called her, at least in those days, in 2002, on her anti-war banners that were set up. This is just after the 9/11 hokey war on terror that was declared by the younger Bush and gone along with by the Democrats and has resulted in the erosion of rights and the advance of illegal foreign wars and a murderous destruction of foreign populations ever since. And it was happening to some extent before under Clinton and the Democrats, but escalated under the Republicans and has maintained escalated under Democrats, Biden and Barack Obama. Then we have Santa Barbara's Nuff Said Nancy McCready talking about RV adventures in Santa Barbara. She's a local activist down there. I worked with her and others for a year when I was employed down there, and about 10 years before this in 1992. And that's a report kind of that came out. And we finally have, well, almost finally, Phil Free's Hospitality Nazi song. He's talking about the so-called hosts on Pacific Avenue, who I think are still there, actually, although I'm not entirely sure of that. And finally, there's Dark Watcher David Bush. He actually called himself David Bush, but I called him Bush in order to distinguish himself from the reigning Führer, the younger Bush, the president at that time. He talks about Santa Barbara's homeless sleeping ban. I'm sorry, Santa Monica's homeless sleeping ban, and some various strategies he's evolved to deal with police interaction with him as a homeless person down there. And that is the long introduction to this March 17, 2002 flashback. So please enjoy it, learn from it, even though it's been played, this will be at least the third time in 25 years. And, well, here it is. But lest I leave without at least a gesture to the present, at the moment a gesture, but hopefully more than that. There is kind of a growing movement now to, at least an initial movement, seeds of a movement, to fight back against the closure of services at the Coral Street complex. That's funding matters. And the reopening of MH Can, the mental health facility that was originally peer-initiated and to some extent peer-run, as well as other services. Of course, these what's really needed is to stop the sweeps as well, to provide at least stop going after and destroying the property of homeless people who are making their own shelter because ultimately they really have no alternatives, or who are choosing that rather than what essentially is a sort of a low-grade jail, which is the nice, well, I should say the reality for the nicely named, People First's shelter system, which includes also, well, includes RVs up there, those who can get in, which is a pretty good system for them, for if those few 15 to 20 who can make it in there, but for the 50 who are in the waiting list and the many others who aren't, it ain't no solution. It's just essentially the pretext that enables the city to criminalize RV dwelling and harass people that they choose to harass, or the police choose to harass, for living in their vehicles when they have no other place to be. Anyway, there's some reorganizing happening, and there's going to be a as mentioned by some folks in this earlier netcast you've just heard, not the flashback, though, but the main netcast, a showing of a movie that essentially highlights a homeless woman's life, Mama Shannon, and gives you some idea of what's happening behind the stereotypes, at least from in the words of homeless folks themselves instead of the paid proxies who are getting paid to, instead of homeless people getting the funding they need, the funding is going to the middle people, sort of the way, similar to how, in a way, similar to how, though perhaps not quite analogous to the way that middlemen suck off the profits and raise the prices of goods and services that could be directly given to people and exchanged or some otherwise conveyed to them at a fair use for use, or use for service, or service for use, or service for item. Lest I sound too much like a commie, I do have sympathies in that direction, or a socialist even in that direction, or an anarchist, I say these people all need to fight together and stand up against what's happening all over the country. And you're going to be seeing that on YouTube until they shut that down on YouTube, of course, if they do, which they don't seem mind doing with David Rovics, at least in his music. Some of his music has all been removed, as has Chris Hedges, the somewhat left-wing political commentator. And now here's the flashback to March 17th, 2002, as reiterated in the October show that was replayed in, well, was played for the first time in 2015, replaying the 2002 historic show. Enjoy.